Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by UC Santa Cruz, chosen by the National Cancer Institute to launch the Cancer Genomics Hub in the quest to decode cancer. More information available at ucsc.edu.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Four prison inmates from Pelican Bay, the state's highest security prison, sent an open letter to Governor Brown, threatening hunger strikes and work stoppages if the state doesn't limit how long prisoners are held in isolation. That's from the LA Times, which reports the letter contends prison officials failed to deliver on promises they made to end hunger strikes involving up to 6,500 inmates in 2011. California's cap-and-trade program to cut greenhouse gases resumes today with its second auction of carbon allowances to industrial polluters. Billions of dollars are at stake, not to mention the state's carbon footprint. But as KQED science editor Craig Miller reports, some questions remain from the first auction.
The state's first-ever carbon auction last November was a very exclusive online event, open only to bidders and regulators at the California Air Resources Board. 4 days later, Mary Nichols, who heads the board, declared it a resounding success, saying the auction came off, quote, without a hitch.
Hundreds of participants were trained at every stage of the process, including how to register and how to bid, and it all worked just as we had hoped it would.
Well, not quite all. One of the biggest players in the auction encountered a rather sizable hitch that Nichols never mentioned. More than a month later, Bloomberg News Service reported that one of California's largest utilities, Southern California Edison, had inadvertently bought about 40% more permits than it intended. Bloomberg said it obtained internal documents that Edison bidders had used the wrong format to submit its bid. Some market players have expressed concern that the $16 million mistake overstated the real demand for carbon permits and set the price for carbon artificially high. It was a gaffe that ensured the auction would sell out, and a hitch that was never made public by regulators.
There's a security aspect to it.
Air Board spokesman Dave Cleggern says there's a reason for the tight lid on bidders. About a week after the Bloomberg story appeared and KQED made its inquiries, the Air Board put out a stern reminder of the rules prohibiting bidders from talking about the auctions.
We are simply trying to let the market take its course without being flooded with misinterpretation or rumors or anything like that that might cause spikes that are unrealistic and unnecessary.
Neither Edison nor the Air Board would talk with us about this particular incident. The current rules prohibit it. And at a recent workshop on information sharing from the Cap and Trade program, it was clear that the Air Board is taking it seriously.
Even statements such as "we were unable to purchase as many allowances as we would have liked" are related to strategy and bid quantity, so those are also prohibited.
Rajinder Sahota manages monitoring of the Cap and Trade program for the board. The state releases general information about each auction, like the total permits offered and purchased, but there's a strict gag order on all market participants when it comes to what individual companies are bidding and buying.
If it comes to our attention that those kinds of discussions are occurring and that that information is being shared, ARB will investigate because at face value they are a violation of the regulation.
Some large corporate cap-and-trade players have argued for less disclosure, but others say generally more is better. Tim O'Connor has been closely watching California's carbon market for the Environmental Defense Fund.
By increasing the transparency and increasing the access to data, I think people can start to realize that it's not a shell game, it's a legitimate tool for reducing emissions.
This concept of transparency is crucial to public confidence, especially in California, where memories are still raw from the late 90s, when manipulation of the electricity market sent utility bills soaring, put PG&E into bankruptcy, and unseated a governor.
If there had been more transparency, it would have become much more quickly clear what had happened.
Seth Borenstein is on the Independent Market Assessment Committee that has argued for more transparency in the carbon markets, but he says it's still a bit unclear where to draw the line.
I think that they are still in the process of developing policy on this. Certainly in the long run, I would want to see them be more transparent and certainly allow more public discussion among stakeholders.
Most of the experts we spoke with agree with Borenstein that overall the market seems to be working. Since its launch in November, the price of California carbon has gone up, which is the right direction for emissions to come down, which they are. And Borenstein, an energy economist at UC Berkeley, says it's not unusual for new markets to start with a hiccup or two.
The market is not going to launch smoothly on day one. Markets never do. It's going to require adjustments. And so the screw-up in this auction, for instance, is one that I don't anticipate will happen again.
The question remains, if it does happen again, and it does affect the market price of carbon credits in California, who will know? For the California Report, I'm Craig Miller.
Ahead of the Oscars, we couldn't help but pick out a particular profile from our occasional series on volunteers in California called The Giving State. Today, we meet a nonprofit consultant from San Leandro who leads free walking tours in San Francisco.
My name is Jay Sherwin. I have been a City Guides volunteer for almost 3 years, and about a year ago, I developed and launched the tour of Alfred Hitchcock San Francisco.
Can everyone see the photo? So when you get to the corner, I'll allow you to stand exactly in Jimmy Stewart's parking space, or at least right in front of Jimmy Stewart's parking space.
When I moved to San Francisco, I knew that this tour was my destiny. It was a way to combine my love of Hitchcock and my love of San Francisco by leading a walking tour that shows off some of the locations where Hitchcock filmed and talking about Hitchcock's love for San Francisco and what his movies say about San Francisco. We take this fascination they have with film and with history and make it real and immediate. We're standing on the spot where Hitchcock and his crew filmed this movie in the fall of 1957. This is a way to give back to my community and a way to do something that I really love. This is something that is just about my own love of these movies and my own passion for them, so it seems like a great way for me to volunteer.
And then, of course, the very best shot of all, the most Hitchcockian shot, is the reaction from the congregation. Everyone gets up and looks and points, and no one does anything. We're a little too passive in the face of things going on in front of us. There are great scenes all through Hitchcock where people look and point and stare, and nobody acts. And he likes to talk about how we're just watching life as if it were a movie when, in fact, it's real life in front of us.
Jay Sherwin was interviewed by our former intern, Lauren Kennedy. You can listen to this piece again and check out other volunteer profiles online at californiareport.org/givingstate. That's the California Report for Tuesday, February 19th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, celebrating the 2013 recipients of the James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards. More information is available at www.irvine.org. Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com. And the California Endowment. Health happens with prevention at calendow.org.